Bonnie Bowling has always been a stranger in a strange land. From her itinerant American childhood to her civilian life in the Persian Gulf, where she and her husband live in Daraz, Bahrain. In 2011, they received a warning that the unrest would begin. Her thought was practical: get to the market.
It was February 14th, and these lovely Bahraini women who were helping to run the cash registers, they knew it was Valentine's Day in the West, and so she handed me a rose. And of course, on my way home, everything erupted.
And Bonnie Bowling began her book, The Red Hijab, published by Bookmark Press in 2016 as the winner of the John Chardy Poetry Prize. Listen to this keen observer who captures daily life from California to Bahrain as she shares poetry from this book and her first prize-winning collection in The Kingdom of the Suns, today on New Letters on the Air, a production of New Letters Magazine at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. I'm Angela Elam, and we talked in July 2017 when she was in the U.S. to visit her four grown sons. Here's Bonnie Bowling with a poem reflecting childhood observations in West Virginia.
Poor white. Hands pale, undersized. A limp flower sack dress. Venture Means sat behind everyone. She sat in the back, behind the boys, on the boys' side of the classroom. She lived down below near the tracks, near the creosote, gravel, and lumps of bituminous. Her father worked the mines. He was sick. All the fathers who worked the mines were sick. Some got buried. The jump rope at school, turning for double dutch, sounded like laughter, our songs pitchy in those freighted afternoons, the air heavy with smoke blown down from the city. Venture Means was skinny. She stayed away from us. Her hair was thin and black. I never heard her voice. I can't remember her shoes. But her eyes were not the eyes of a child, not like our eyes, guilty of nothing. Once, in winter, a cloud of sheets broke free from the pins on the clothesline and slapped in the wind. And once, after morning flurries, before she was taken away, I watched Vinchu fall back onto the white playground to make snow angels, her body shivering in the cold and the sky swelling again and bleaching, her small arms pumping, her small hips thrashing, her lips smiling.
Poor White, from the book In the Kingdom of the Suns by Bonnie Bowling. And that was actually the title of her 2010 MFA thesis at the University of California, Riverside. So when did you write your first poem?
My first poem? Well, does it count when you're a school child?
Yes, it does.
I came of age during the time when they were still teaching poetry in elementary school in West Virginia. This was in the 60s, and we were given as a text, I believe it was maybe third grade, Reflections on a Gift of Watermelon Pickle. It was a very different kind of poetry at that time, wherein previously, of course, we were reading Emily Dickinson and Robert Frost and Rudyard Kipling, which, of course, are all wonderful, too. But this new text had an impact on me. I moved many, many times. My father was kind of a migrant factory worker. And so we followed the work. And when you do move so frequently, there is a lot of solitude for a child. And so you do read. And that was also part of it. Yeah. And my parents gave me the gift of allowing me to read anything I wanted. They had books, and I would read them as best I could.
Right.
And they never stopped me.
You came back to poetry as a writer
of
it. When your sons were older?
They were older. Mm-hmm. I received my BA in a double major, English-Spanish, and went on to do many other things. And as they became older, I always wrote during this time, but then I went back for my graduate degree. And so this first book of poems I began maybe 2005.
Well, one of your first poems to garner some notice was a finalist for the Rita Dove Poetry Award, and it was Waiting at a Window in the Kingdom of the Suns. You have a quote from Adrian Rich to begin this: how we dwelt in two worlds, the daughter and the mother in the kingdom of the sons. This poem is included in this first book, so I thought I might have you read that.
Sure. Snow falling on a stand of blue spruce outside the hospital window silences the sound of the hobbling one-legged veteran who struggles to light his cigarette. He smokes and waits while two bundled-up volunteers argue over casseroles. Naked, melting on a bed inside the window, I suck on ice chips. A birth pang grips like a hot iced tongue. I don't cry out, but stare through the window where a red-mittened child ignores his mother and chases a yellow stray through the drifts and into the sleeping wood beyond. I time my breaths. The cross-country skier draws his parallel lines, and I focus on the feathery swirls around him. Contractions come quickly, but only the pain is inside me now. Myself has gone missing, to get drunk under shooting stars, to revisit the balcony at L'Hôtel du Louvre, me wearing the black thong, sipping champagne, then not wearing the black thong, then the black thong sailing over the rail, drifting down to Rue de Rivoli, while the moon sighed over Tuileries and Mona Lisa gazed through her glass with longing. Before I had sun after sun after sun after sun, I fixated on wars, protest marches, and Senate Bill AB 321, taunting weary necktied senators on Capitol lawns, my words unfettered. But then the vegetarians created great irony and had their abortions. So I built a bitchocracy. I planted heirloom tomatoes and rearranged my arguments. Documents were signed, trade-offs made, and now there were days when housework was the only outlet. But a night or so ago, I went outside to walk in the forest to put an end to the waiting. Barefoot, I stood in the snow and heard snuffling moose forage for green under the eaves. I arranged my bones on top of the snow in a slant of pink moonlight, snowflakes melting through layers of flannel and the permafrost dust of the dead beneath my spine. I imagined my body floating above, among the aurora borealis, pulsing, roiling, content in a state of houselessness, a wandering insomniac like the moose pulling the hanging boughs. Now, snow billows from a gauzy sky, clumping atop the lampposts outside, and the window itself sharply sees in and out, out at the spoon-colored sky, and in, where I bring my son into the bare rooms of his life. I give him a breast, refuse to rest, and raise the window sash one icy inch and wait for my mind to return to itself, for myself to return to an empty body, as if life depends on synchronization. And I inhale the silence of the snow in harmony with its falling, each bright snowflake a chilly rhyme to redden the blood. And I rocked my son at the window.
Waiting at a Window in the Kingdom of the Suns by Bonnie Bowling from her first collection called In the Kingdom of the Suns, winner of the 2011 Liam Rector First Book Prize for Poetry. And this is New Letters on the Air. Was this sort of the beginning for you?
That is an early poem. And I had written others for classes and coursework, and I had been studying Adrienne Rich. And when I reached her work, it had an impact on me. And I realized that I wanted to write something that fulfilled something other than just the joy of putting words together, using rhyme and meter, perhaps, or just something that meant something to me and maybe to others. Her work had a, I want to say, profound impact on my work, and so I had to include her.
She was an amazing poet. She was so important because of her vision of the world and her
ideas. She just cared so much. Mm-hmm. She cared deeply about everything. really. And she kept writing till the very end, it seemed. She had a manifesto I would carry in my back pocket. It seems like when poetry is called contemporary, often it's based on what the writer has read of poets who are writing now, as opposed to looking back and seeing that river of poetry with the voices from the beginning. And I think it can make a poem and a poet's work so much richer and lasting if the young poets also include these poets they may not have heard of, or ones that come from different decades that they might believe initially they don't want to write like them, perhaps. But it's still so important to have that voice in your head, I believe.
With your next book, The Red Hijab, you're looking at people and their situations in the world. I mean, it's very different in The Red Hijab because you take us to Bahrain in the Middle East, and you're looking at these people who have difficult lives, and yet there's kind of a joyful moment in there as well. You have a lot of mixture of that, the hard and the joyful together, swirling around within a poem. Do you feel that's just your vision of the world?
I think it is. I'm always facing that inner struggle. Maybe you are too, where something is awfully terrible, but you still have to live in the world and go on in your day and take care of the people you love. And so it's not a rejection of the negativity or the harshness that is happening to those around us. It's just an acceptance of it, maybe.
And knowing that you have to go forth and survive,
we
basically.
We must survive, yes.
Yeah. I think I'll have you begin The Red Hijab with the title poem, because that's how you chose to open this book. The book's divided in three sections, as was in The Kingdom of the Suns. This particular section opens with Adonis. Red was the sun's most beautiful throne, and all the other colors prayed on red rugs.
The Red Hijab. A hard rain falling on the corrugated roof of the abandoned double-wide across the steaming street, its tangle of razor wire and oleander, the rotting porch, cats prowling underneath and mewing from branches of the long-dead acacia tree, and I'd been at my desk all morning, upstairs in the loft, the winged windows streaked and pocked with drops and rivulets, and the ring-necked doves all lined up under the eaves, wings folded and feathers fluffed. This place is as old as anything. Every kind of person has traveled through, every animal and bird and weapon. So these days, only rain is remarkable. I'm watching the trash-picking man, his head wrapped in a potato sack, his shoulders buttressing the clouds, dragging his bin down the cobbles, driveway to driveway, rain beating down to the tip of his nose. And then a housemaid passing by, basket of laundry in one hand, opened umbrella in the other, her brown face turned down, but her red hijab, a damp smudge of brightness, moving in relief against the bruising sky.
The Red Hijab, that's the title poem from the book that won the John Chardy Prize for Poetry, selected by H.L. Hicks. You're listening to Bonnie Bowling here today on New Letters on the Air. That paints such an image of the oldness of the Middle East and some of the sites that you might see there, and I thought was a very nice opening to this book. Well, tell me about Bahrain and what took you there. I kind of figured out from my reading of the poetry that maybe your husband's work took you over there.
It did. Like my father, we are following the work, and it was an opportunity for us to live together over there. And we jumped on it. It's adventure. It's interesting. It's changed us in a good way, I'd like to think.
Does your husband work in the oil industry?
It's kind of a combination of things. He works with the government and with a private company, and it's LNG mostly. That's liquid natural gas.
Oh, okay.
And the country itself discovered they have this, but at the time the technology wasn't available to them to do anything about it. And so it's an opportunity for expats to go over there and work with the native Bahrainis and teach them the technology. So it's kind of a partnership. He went over in 2009. I was finishing my graduate studies. I joined him when I was finished in 2010.
Did your boys go? Because you have the four sons that you mentioned in that first
It was an interesting there. Situation. No. They were finished with high school. Some of them were at university, and one was out working already. So while they have visited us, they did not spend any amount of time there. It was my husband and myself, and that was our adventure.
Well, let's follow up with the second poem in the book, In Duraz, because again, this will give people an idea of where we are. And this was one of the poems that was chosen to be printed in New Letters magazine.
In Duraz, the first heat of the year pressing in, heavy like a hurricane, coming down hard, and then the azan, pushing again, creeping in, doing its work, so I've come to expect it, to wait for it. This is a place where if you want a chair, you have to pay a man to make one. Sometimes the birds talk to me, also the nameless cat, claiming his small dry patch under the hedgerow. He among us who bears no shame also has no love. And outside these village walls, the world, oh, the world. And inside them are no bullet trains, no sounds of alleluia, only the sun devouring every corner, only a man rolling up the creaking metal storefront, another who is washing his feet, then he is kneeling, praying before taking his lunch, and a woman is sweeping the ancient's dust into a bin, staring hard at her work, breathing her story into the stony air. And here I stand on the corner, leaning next to the sign that says in three languages, no uncovered women allowed, adjusting and readjusting my black hijab, me on this narrow broken footpath, keeping my silence and my distance, because whoever my gods are, they're surely wrong for this place. Me across from the bright gold and blue tiled mosque, Shiite, not Sunni. Sunni mosques are made of pale stone. No one's looking at me, but everyone's looking away from me, even the woman. Oh, there's no fooling her. The market had no meat today, only the hindquarters of a sheep swinging on a hook, so another salad will do tonight with some lentils and bread. Tomatoes are good here. Despite everything, they pay attention to vegetables. My home is not here, but I don't think it's there either, and my children are not here. They are there, eating pancakes in the kitchen, or listening to music, or maybe they are kissing someone. But here, in Duraz, in front of this old doorway, a villager stands up from his praying, folds away his small carpet, and starts making a broom.
In Duraz, included in The Red Hijab by Bonnie Bowling, and it's also one of four of her poems published in New Letters magazine, in volume 83, number 1. And we haven't read one yet that really has violence in it that you've seen. Can you talk about Bahrain's troubles, just a brief overview for people who just group all of the Middle East together?
I can try to shed some light on that. Bear in mind that I'm an observer from another place, and I only know what I know. And I will try to tell you in as accurate way as possible. Bahrain is an archipelago in the Persian Gulf, kind of sandwiched between Saudi Arabia and Iran on the other side. And because of that, it is populated by both Sunni Arabs of perhaps Saudi descent and also by Shias who are Persian descent, which, as you know, was a large region that has now been broken up and has become mainly Iran. So the unrest began
for Bahrain on February 14th, 2011. And the archipelagos, not too long ago, were all separate, each one their own village, each village with their own arch and their own way of doing things. Decades later, bridges were built, so there was more traffic going on between the villages. And so people were learning about other cultures, just even in this small cultural entity, they were learning about each other. And what happened, if you fast forward to this time that we are in now, the kingdom is headed by a Sunni royal family. And because of that, the Persian sectors of mainly Shias felt they weren't receiving their fair share or what should have been equally awarded to them as it was awarded to the Sunni members of the kingdom. And so when the unrest began, it followed a series of problems that began, I think, December in Yemen. You might remember when the vegetable seller was arrested and his vegetables thrown away because he had no license. And this man was actually college educated. There was no work for him. And so he took to the streets to sell vegetables. And at that point, he decided that was enough. And so he set himself on fire in the streets. And that sort of became the catalyst for this recent unrest. And it spread to Egypt, as you might remember, and then it came over the borders into Bahrain. We were on lockdown, and I was upstairs in my room, and I began this book.
Wow.
It saddens me because I met a lot of wonderful people, and the villages are beautiful, ancient, nothing like them I've ever seen anywhere, and many of them are destroyed, and people are unhappy with one another, and so
It breaks your heart.
It really does.
Yeah.
There's a certain sadness.
This particular poem, and I think this is one of the ones that ended up being published in New Letters as well, contrast your life and a little bit of the dangerous situation that you're in, but also how it's tough on the people who live in and of that culture. It's called Shmal.
Mm-hmm. Shmal means, well, technically it means north. When the winds come in, they call them the Shmal. Shmal. And then winds again, coming from the north, bringing a crust of pink, like snow, like ice, so you have to take a shovel to it. After that, the rains. Who said every common thing that comes to us is a blessing, gone unnoticed until taken away? We live the lives we live, not the ones we dream, and soon enough we'll lie beneath it all, so better to insist while there's still time. Like the young boys wearing black, gathering beneath the village arch, they're restless again. You can tell by their eyes they'll stop at nothing this time. Though slim-hipped and bony-shouldered, together they could overturn my small car, but instead they go after the old Pakistani. They cast their stones, and then, because a mother's love isn't enough, they take him down in the burning street. All of this makes a great and terrible debacle, but even so, the boys look away. Bored of this game, they trace bare toes through wet dust. They wait between supper and the flames, ignoring the bright tongues at work. They hug themselves. They stare at the rain.
Shmal, from The Red Hijab by Bonnie Bowling. Yeah, there's a fearfulness, you know, that they're going after somebody. And we do see some acts of violence in these groups of poems, like people having their tongues cut out, and that one woman who's grieving for her son while she's killing chickens. Were you ever fearful with all the unrest?
It's important to be fearful sometimes just to protect yourself, but also, I was fearful for my safety, but more so of the breaking down of the beautiful parts of what I considered so wonderful in this small kingdom. Earlier today, I was talking with some people about the history of Missouri and the Civil War, And it's very similar. There's family against family, brother against brother. And to me, that is much more scary than just worrying about my own safety. I could go home and lock the door to my kitchen and be safe. But these people, they were the ones who were paying the price and also causing the unrest.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to watch. And yet you still go back.
Well, that's for a different reason. My husband and I are partners, and we stay together for the most part. Living over there is difficult. It's not an easy lifestyle. And so together, it seems to work out better.
Well, it's certainly given you some fodder for your poetry.
Honestly, you could call it a gift, and how could I not write about it?
Yeah. I thought we would end today with the ending poem of the book. And if you want to set this up, you can. It's called On a Balcony with the Lunch Poems.
I was actually on a balcony with Frank O'Hara's Lunch Poems.
Of course.
And one of his
favorite
things was to walk around New York and have lunch and long lunches and observe. And so I did that. And it was during the period of the unrest. It's funny how people become accustomed to such a thing and must begin going about their lives. You have to go to the market still. You have to have lunch. You have to cook and go to work. So here I am on a balcony with the lunch poems. The sun kneels on the landscape. The sky is chalked. Helicopters. Nevertheless, it's lunchtime, so I'm here for some fish, some good bread, and olives. In the distance, the gold-domed palace, black prayer flags, bright rows of laundry hanging. They're smiling as they bring it all up. There is wine. A boy playing hooky is the school on fire again, splashes in a fountain. And everyone laughs because God would have wanted us to. They say someone's dying right now and brutally deep in the village. They carry up more wine. Down in the courtyard, the Bangladeshi fertilizes something with his good hand, clears away last night's muta marriage contracts. This in the news today. A fatwa to burn every church, destroy all Buddhas and saints. And strictly no sale or usage of tampons at the airport. Meanwhile, a woman lifts her kneecap and sips. Smoldering tires. Someone's unloading yams. I get up to find the toilet. The azan pierces the afternoon. A lost nuthatch panics on the railing. An apron of tear gas, made in America, snowing. A man face down, praying. In Southern California, my son's enduring the accident that is their mother. I remember loving the way their faces looked when I pushed the red plastic swing, roped to the high limb of the willow. Oh, the creaking, creaking, always the going, always the returning, the four of them wearing Superman underwear.
On a Balcony with the Lunch Poems, from The Red Hijab, the John Chardy Poetry Prize winner from Bookmark Press. She's been published by New Letters Magazine, too, which also hosts a literary contest for poetry, essays, and fiction with an annual deadline of May 18th. Links to that, as well as to Bonnie Bowling's books and her online magazine, are on our website, newletters.org. From UMKC, today's show was produced with Claire Verbeck, Jordan Hooper, and Jamie Walsh. I'm Angela Elam for New Letters on the Air.